Next, we have Pinto v. Vaughn.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Edward Chung, and I'm serving as counsel on behalf of the appellant, Suraj Pinto. This is a medical malpractice informed consent matter. We're asking that this court reverse the trial court's granting of motion for summary judgment on behalf of two medical professionals. The respondent, L. Douglas Trimble, a maxillofacial surgeon, as well as Leon and Vaughn, a husband and wife who are orthodontists. When we come to the court today, I'm concerned in when I first looked at this case as to what is the necessary threshold of evidence that is required here in order to be successful in overcoming a motion for summary judgment. Initially, when I was first served with the first motion for summary judgment by Dr. Trimble's, they included a significant amount of the discovery, which were interrogatories and requests for productions that were attached to their motion for summary judgment. And in that discovery, it contained a number of materials from medical records to other doctors to treating physicians that I thought, when I first received it, that was curious as to why they would be putting that as part of their motion for summary judgment, because I believed at that point it raised genuine issues and material facts, because there were issues that were contained in there that suggest that there was a deviation in the standard of care.
You've got to have an expert who articulates what the standard of care is and specifically how it was violated here, right?
Yes, that is correct.
For Dr. Trimble, you had Rothwell, an ear, nose, throat guy, who says this enlarged whatever resulted from the surgery, but there's no discussion of standard of care.
There is, yes, Your Honor, but there we provide a medical professional, Dr. Rockwell, who is an ENT doctor, that does provide a testimony in relation as to the narrowing of a pathway. I think it's important to note that the Dr. Trimble's initial motion lacked any medical expert or any declaration that would suggest that what Dr. Rockwell had said is not accurate. I'm not a doctor, and I don't understand fully the significance of what Dr. Rockwell was saying, but it does seem to appear to me that in light most favorable to the non-moving party on a motion for summary judgment with all reasonable inferences in favor of the non-moving party, that there was an inference that there was a deviation in the standard of care from Dr. Rockwell. Now, we also turn to Dr. Grossman, who is a DDS from California, who does also address a number of issues in relation as to the standard of care. Now, my understanding in reviewing the briefing from Dr. Trimble's counsel is that he is not qualified to be as an expert in this particular case because he's not licensed here in the state of Washington. It's my understanding is that this doesn't necessarily mean that Dr. Grossman is not competent to provide testimony.
Okay, if we accept that, though, where does the report and his short summary after it take us? It's got general statements. He's got valid complaint. Patient has valid complaints regarding breaches of the standard of care. Doesn't really say what the standard of care is. Second surgery was an unnecessary. Maybe that gets close to it, but he doesn't actually say any specifics why or how that violates the standard of care. It says concerted efforts contributed to the demise.
Correct. Yes, you're correct, Your Honor. And does it actually, you know, when you have a medical malpractice case and you're getting declarations from medical doctors, it's not for the attorney to tell the doctor, this is what we specifically need you to write in relation to this motion for summary judgment that was provided. And I should also note that this initial report was when my client was initially representing himself pro se. But that being said, I do believe that the standard on a motion for summary judgment, if you consider reasonable inferences, favors Mr. Pinto in this particular case. I can't attest to what the opposing side feels in terms of whether that qualifies as significant enough to show an inference or not, because they never provided any expert testimony.
As your time is slipping away here.
Okay. Yes, and then...
Doctors Leon and Vaughn, where do we go when the court has stricken the expert witnesses?
Well, that's an interesting point, Your Honor, because that was a motion for a non-dispositive... It was a non-dispositive motion, and the court had already ruled on summary judgment at that time. And so we feel that the court at that time, it was improper for the court to even to consider that motion, because it had already had made a ruling on summary judgment. In terms of Leon and Vaughn and excluding that expert, I don't quite understand why that occurred in light of the fact that we disclosed this expert. And initially, Leon and Vaughn's counsel, when they substituted as counsel, they had requested for a motion for a continuance to allow them more time to review the medical records and the 20 witnesses. We stipulated to that. The court denied both those motions for a continuance. There wasn't any bad faith here in trying to hide the ball from Leon and Vaughn's counsel in relation to Dr. Panametros. He was disclosed as part of the second disclosure of witness, and we identified him as an expert.
It reads from the court's interlineations that the court was concerned, yeah, you gave him the name in this supplemental disclosure, but you didn't give any details what the opinion was going to be, what is, you know, the details under CR 26.
Well, we gave the name. We said that he's reviewed the medical records, and respectfully, they never took any depositions. They never engaged in any discovery. They never, except for Mr. Pinto, they took Mr. Pinto's.
But if you've violated the discovery requirements that you're subject to, how do those points make a difference?
Well, I believe that we didn't violate those. I believe that we provided sufficient information for them to be able to explore that further. And when they made that motion, they went ahead. Well, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. We're going to split up the time, 3 minutes for me, 7 minutes for Ms. Lackland.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Kessel. I represent Dr. Trimble in this case. He is an oral surgeon who performed surgery on Mr. Pinto. There are two claims against him. One is for breach of the standard of care, and the second is for failure to obtain informed consent. Both of those claims require competent medical testimony from the plaintiff to defeat a summary judgment motion from the defendants.
What if somebody says, I never wanted surgery, I didn't realize I was going to have surgery, and then boom, turns out I got surgery. Do you need an expert to say that's invalid informed consent?
No, I believe if a doctor is performing a surgery that the patient does not want, then no. But what happened, so in an informed consent case, you need medical expert testimony to show the existence of a risk, the likelihood of its occurrence, and the type of harm in question. So if there's no discussion whatsoever between the doctor and the patient, then I would say no. In this case, that is what the expert testimony that is required is for existence of the risk, likelihood, and harm in question. Dr. Rockwell, he's an ear, nose, throat doctor. He offered no opinions whatsoever regarding informed consent, nor did Dr. Grossman, at least not the elements that are required for competent medical expert testimony. With respect to the standard of care, you need a competent medical expert testimony showing what the standard of care is and how the doctor violated the standard of care. Again, we have Dr. Rockwell. He's the ear, nose, throat doctor. He offers no opinions regarding standard of care. What he's offering causation opinions, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the standard of care opinions.
How about Grossman when he says the second surgery wasn't necessary? Does that come pretty close to saying that's a violation of the standard of care?
No, I think he offers what could be construed as standard of care opinions, but the issue is his competence to provide such testimony. He's a general dentist. He's licensed in California and Nevada. And in order, and our, my client is a, an oral surgeon. In order for Dr. Grossman to offer standard of care opinions about an oral surgeon, he needs to show that he's familiar with the procedures or the options based on his education, training, or experience. And he did not do that in his declaration. So his testimony was not competent testimony, and so therefore the trial court properly disregarded it and granted summary judgment. And we ask that this court affirm the dismissal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Lisa Lackland. I represent the respondents, Drs. Vaughn, Leone, and their practice, Vaughn and Leone Orthodontics. Now, it's telling that when Mr. Pinto's counsel got up here, he said that he represents two defendants. Well, actually, there are more than two defendants, but throughout the course of this litigation and in the course of the expert declarations at issue, the, one of the issues is that the doctors have been lumped together. But in reality, I represent two separate orthodontists, Dr. Gregory Vaughn and Dr. Paola Leone. They're two separate people who are two separate doctors who treated this patient separately. So everything that Mr. Kessel just said regarding the expert testimony that was necessary to sustain claims against Dr. Trimble also apply to my clients. And plaintiffs simply did not come forward with the requisite expert testimony to support claims against the two orthodontists that he had sued.
If we consider Dr. Panamitros in his declaration, doesn't that start to touch on some standard of care concerns? This was, there should have been a diagnosis, a consult with the oral surgeon at the very front end. There should have been a CT scan at the very front end. Does that imply that's a reach of the standard of care for an orthodontist?
That may. First of all, in regard to Dr. Panamitros, I want to clear something up. Plaintiffs, or the appellant's briefing, appellate briefing, and appellant's reply brief on pages 1 and 2, there is a blatant falsehood stated in there. It says that Dr. Panamitros set forth his background and training in orthodontics in his declaration. In reality, there are two Panamitros declarations that were submitted to the court. The first one was submitted in response to my defendant's motion for summary judgment.
With the CV attached?
With the CV attached. It was the very long and jumbled declaration. In that declaration, in the very beginning, there is a part on his training, but nothing says anything about education or training or experience in orthodontics, which is my client's specialty and which is what they were treating Mr. Pinto for. In this case, they were dentists specializing in orthodontics who were treating Mr. Pinto for his protrusion and proclination of his teeth due to maxillary arch deficiency and bimaxillary retrognathia. Now, those are orthodontic conditions for which these specialists were treating Mr. Pinto for. Because
he says he's a member of the American Orthodontic Society.
It does say that. My CV says that I was once a member of I once studied art and architecture in Italy. That doesn't mean that I am experienced to qualify, I have the experience and qualifications to testify as an expert. And that's not enough. It, even if it says that he is listed as a member of an orthodontic society, it is plaintiff's burden to affirmatively set forth qualifications in the relevant specialty. And in this case, the relevant specialty is orthodontics, and more specifically, the treatment, the diagnosis and treatment of the very specific conditions that I just discussed.
If considered, doesn't his declaration on reconsideration get him over that hurdle?
I still don't think it does, because as the trial court pointed out in denying the order for the motion for reconsideration, he still, Dr. Panametra still specifically fails to set forth that he has any experience. He does touch upon general orthodontics. He gets a little bit closer. But we're talking about a specific condition here, and he does not say that at all, let alone to say the trial court found that not only had Dr. Panametra failed to set forth affirmatively his qualifications to testify as to the matters of this case, the rest of the declaration was also, the trial court deemed it a mishmash of pronouncements. And I have to agree, if Your Honors try to read it, it is difficult to read. Nobody can really decipher what Dr. Panametros is trying to say.
Inferences in the light most favorable to the non-moving party?
I still don't think so, because conclusory opinions that do not meet, that do not say that the defendants violated the standard of care within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, and that within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, those violations caused the injuries claimed. That's what's necessary, and Dr. Panametros, even with inferences, does not get there.
Doesn't he suggest they started treating without actually arriving at a diagnosis, and that led to this lack of concerted effort by the team, and that's caused all these problems?
Perhaps he says that, but he still does not. He does not set forth what the standard of care required and what the defendant should have done. Now, I'm going to touch on the declaration. He does not delineate any differences between Dr. Vaughn and Dr. Leone, and he even throws Dr. Trimble in there. And because I'm running out of time, I want to say, now, as to the second Panametros declaration, that was submitted on reconsideration. That was submitted and signed September 28th. Now, the original summary judgment order was signed September 17th, so the one on reconsideration shouldn't even be considered. Now, the trial court denied plaintiff's motion for reconsideration, and that issue has not been briefed by plaintiffs on appeal, and that issue is waived. Now, another thing, we've talked a lot about damages here in the surgery. Your Honors have asked about the surgery. Dr. Trimble performed the surgery. All the harm that plaintiff has talked about is from Dr. Trimble. My client's orthodontist did not perform the surgery. I'll stand on my briefing for the rest of arguments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, in relation as to the trial court's interpretation of the medical reports that were provided by Dr. Rockwell, Dr. Grossman, and Dr. Panametros, and whether there was a mismatch of understanding, I don't believe that the trial court had the ability to comment as to whether this report was accurate or not. The way to make an assessment as to whether it's accuracy or there was a breach of the standard of care would have been for there to be some sort of additional expert testimony from the opposing side provided as a rebuttal declaration. This did not happen. I took a look at these declarations, and Dr. Rockwell says, after reviewing Mr. Pinto's medical and dental records on a more probable than not basis, the retronathic and orthognathic procedures narrowed Mr. Pinto's airway and affected the alignment of his naval cavity. In all reasonable inferences in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, there's not enough evidence that has been provided by the opposing side to for summary judgment to have been granted. Thank you.
Next, we have Resnick and Lawrenson.